Hey, everybody. Welcome to Hobbs and Friends of the OSR. I'm your host, Jason Hobbs, and with me today, I've got the mastermind of Litterbox Studios and one of my podcast mentors, Sean P. Kelly. Oh, yeah, he might be part of the duo on the RPG podcast, Gaming NBS. Hey, Sean, how you doing?
What's going on, Hobbs? I am so excited to be here. I am a friend of Hobbs and the OSR, well, at least one or the other.
That's good. I appreciate it. Chris told me I was supposed to call you Sean the Railroad, Kelly.
Is that what he said?
Yes.
So the reason he brings that up is because my take on game mastering, it's tongue-in-cheek. I don't know if anybody actually takes me seriously. I hope they don't. But when we talk about role-playing games on our show, I say that the players think that they're along for, you know, they have choice and agency and all this stuff. And I'm like, nah, it's just whatever I put out on the table. Because if they choose one thing, I just decide to put whatever in front of them, which is more railroad. So I have a reputation of being railroad GM, which I'm really not, but that's the joke.
Well, it's not that funny. No, I'm just kidding.
It isn't really that funny. Unless you're at my table, Hobbs.
Which I've never actually been a player as you a GM.
Well, that's really weird. I haven't invited you to a game as a player? Huh, that's weird. That's strange.
I wonder why that is. Anyway, I thought that it might be interesting to talk about how we actually knew each other. I think I met you at GaryCon 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah, I think so. I think it would have been GaryCon for sure.
We were drinking with Joe Bittman, if you remember that.
Oh, yeah, my buddy Job. I don't know if it was the one night I helped Job back to his hotel room, which he will deny because he probably can't remember, but I don't know if it was that same con or not. But yeah, we had a good time. It's always a good time at GaryCon.
That's true. I'm pretty excited about it. As of this recording, we got 4 days?
Yeah, man. Yeah. Are you going up Wednesday or Thursday?
Wednesday. I always go Wednesday.
Yeah. I wish I did because I know a lot of people like to kick stuff off on Wednesday and run games the night before, but I'm working Wednesday, kind of.
What?
Well, my employer thinks I'm working. I can't stay focused on a Wednesday before a con.
Yeah, but don't you live like an hour away, if that?
Yeah, so that's why I'm going to drive down Thursday morning.
Why wouldn't you drive Wednesday night?
Because it's complicated, Hobbs.
Dude, you can crash at my room.
Oh, I appreciate
Wednesday night is drinking night.
What night is not drinking night?
No, I mean, that's really drinking night.
I know, people really do. I end up showing up on Thursday and everybody's like, oh my God, I'm so hungover. I'm like, what the hell? Come up Wednesday and kick off the booze soiree.
This is the longest guest introduction I've ever had.
Really? Hey, suck it, Guinness.
Okay, so
Are you explicit, Hobbs? Can I like drop F-bombs and stuff on this show?
I don't care.
Okay, I just wonder.
Yeah, I don't care.
I will behave.
I have before, I think. Okay, so let's talk about what we've done recently in gaming. In the last couple of weeks, all I've actually played is 5th edition with Jose and my buddy Bird. It's just made it up on one day because no one else could show up. And it's actually overpowered most of my thinking lately, and I haven't been able to do anything else. How about you, Sean?
So I play in a 5e game. We have kicked off Storm's King Thunder. We're in the second, well, we had two sessions. So I play in that every 2 weeks. And then the alternating week, I was playing some games with my co-host Brett and the gang before the holidays. We haven't recovered from that, kind of like tanked. So I'm getting the itch to run something that opposite week. So, but otherwise it's 5e. Storm King's Thunder. We just finished up before that Ravenloft or the Curse of Strahd, which was pretty fun.
Good. Do you think 5e is an OSR game?
Oh, man. I know you posed this like on to Bird and Carlos.
Okay, so you're not going to answer?
the OSR has a lot of meanings and definitions, and sometimes they're really personal to people, Hobbs.
Totally.
So I guess, how do you define, I'll put it on you, Hobbs. How do you define the OSR? And I could tell you if I agree that the 5e fits that.
You're going to have me on your show because I don't have that kind of time on my show.
Yeah, we'll run long and we'll get that summed up in an hour, hour and a half.
All right.
I think 5e, to answer your question, I think it has elements of the OSR. I think it's one of the better iterations of D&D that has ever been made. I think people will argue with me. They'll be like, oh my God, you're crazy. That's not true. Well, it's my opinion, so it doesn't matter what anybody else thinks.
Truth has nothing to do with it.
Well, facts within the RPG industry are tough unless they're based in rules, I think.
All right.
Yeah.
So the last part of this introduction is my Everything About You segment.
Oh, boy.
Where I like to give information about myself, and then my guests should do the same, something maybe the listeners don't know. So this week, am I actually going to come out and confess that I'm really not a grognard? I haven't been in the OSR scene for 10 or 12 years during its existence. In fact, probably in the last 5 years, I got interested more in the history of the OSR or gaming in it itself. And I learned a lot from my buddy Adam Miskevich and did a lot of research online. And there's the truth. I call myself a neo-grognard, which, you know, like a new grognard. And I respect those old guys, but some of them are really crotchety. So you got anything about yourself?
So is it gaming related? Or what? It could be anything. Because I might not be able to say just anything, because then you might have to testify, Obbs, and that's some of those things don't have the statute of limitations up yet.
Really?
Yeah. Something about me? Well, yeah. What can I say? I guess if people haven't listened to our show at gamingabs.com, shameful plug, I would have to say that, you know, I'm not one of those guys that have been playing since the 70s or 80s. I had a huge break in role-playing games, and got back into it when a friend of mine approached me. He was GMing his younger nephew and said, hey, we should get the gang back together. So, I mean, I had like must have been, I don't know, 12-year hiatus from gaming. And then when I got back into it, man, it was all in. Set up a community website, started going to conventions, playing on a more consistent basis. I mean, so I think that's, some people may or may not know that, but I'm not one that comes on and says, well, I've been playing, you know, steady since the 80s, and that's when I started, but it hasn't been consistently for 40, 30 years, whatever.
I totally agree. In fact, I stopped playing Dungeons & Dragons for about 10 years myself. I was actually playing Champions for 5 or 6 years, or the Hero System, which is an awesome system. I just don't have the time for it anymore, because everything you make, you know, it takes an extended amount of time. So I can agree with you there, and that's awesome.
Curious, Hobbs, on that, when you got out, you know, how did you get back into it?
I always had my stuff. I didn't sell it all or anything. And when I got divorced, my new wife was interested in it a little bit until I showed her, and then she's like, no, this is stupid. I don't have time for this. So then I got back with some of my old buddies like Berg, and met a lot of people online, and that's kind of where I started playing again.
So you just got the itch.
Well, I got a shot to clear the itch up, and then I decided to start playing games.
Hey, man, I don't want to discuss your, like, medical records and stuff, medical history.
Well, stop saying I got the itch, then.
Well, I'm just curious. Like, it wasn't somebody that approached you and said, oh, man, you got out of it. Yo, you need to start playing again.
Oh, no. I mean, I was always kind of having stuff sit around, and maybe I would get together with one guy and talk about gaming, but playing online has totally increased the amount that I can play, and that really sticks you into the niche of our hobby more than it would if you always had to wait and only could play once a month or something like that, which is what I was doing for a while. But now that I play 3 or 4 times a week sometimes, it really increases that creativity and just how much you love the hobby itself. Make sense?
Yeah. You play 3 to 4 times a week?
Yeah, sometimes.
Man, that's good for you, man.
Yeah, it's awesome. I still miss face-to-face games, but online, I mean, you could play every night if you want to.
So are you playing? You're playing all 3 to 4 times a week online?
Yeah.
Wow, that's cool. Are you playing with folks that you know, or are you kind of throwing it out to people that you may know or complete strangers?
I'd say that most of the games I play now are people that I've met online over the past 5 or 6 years, and I usually play with them, but on my Roll20 profile, it shows that I've played with maybe over 150 different people.
Wow.
Just on Roll20. So
those, out of those, like, 150, are you, I don't mean to, like, derail your show, man. Just tell me to shut up. But I find this interesting because me and you and I haven't talked a lot about like how we game, who we game with, and things like that. So it just interests me because you played a lot and you're playing 3 to 4 times a week. How many of those people are like new people or haven't played in a while? Are they all folks that are kind of playing more consistently than others?
Do you mean new gamers or are they new to me?
I would say new gamers or haven't played in like 10 years, or are they just all like you and I, like we're consistently playing at least once a week?
I think both. Mm-hmm. Most of the people, once they start playing, and if they do like it online, then they're consistent gamers then. But some of them haven't played for a long time that I'll meet online, or someone else will, because you never know what's going to happen when you start gaming with somebody. You may start talking to them all the time. Or maybe they're douchers and you don't ever talk to them again. I don't know.
Douchers? But, wow. I'm use that one. Not douchebag, doucher. Okay.
Yeah, doucher. It seems nicer than douchebag.
Yeah, it's a little French, too. You could say douche. Like.
You could. I wouldn't, but no. You could. Yeah. Right. I'm just kidding. All right, so let's talk about Dungeon Crawl Classics, because that's the game of the week.
ECC!
And we played Tower of Faces by Nick Abruzzo together. It was a play test that he was working on because Goodman Games awarded him to produce basically Tower of Faces, right?
Yeah, I don't know. Did he win a contest or something? I know at Game Hole they had something, and then Goodman Games, whoever won it, Goodman Games was going to produce it. And I don't. Is that where he got the opportunity?
I think so. As far as I know, he did win the contest. I don't remember what it was called. And I was actually going to ask you if you remembered who judged it at Game Home, but apparently not.
I don't actually know. I don't know if it was Alex Kammer, who's the director of Game Home, and some of his entourage, or some of the folks that run the con, or if there was a different panel.
I think it was DCC guys, like Doug, and maybe Beatty, and Brendan, probably.
Oh, sure. Yep. Because Brendan was there.
I think that's who it was, because I remember I went to lunch with Brendan and Dave, and they were talking about having to judge something, I thought. But that might have been Doug saying that, too. I don't remember.
Yeah.
So anyway, he did win a contest by Goodman Games, and it's going to get produced by them, and their production quality is really awesome. So congrats to Nick on that. That's awesome achievement. But you know Nick personally, right?
I know Nick from being online as friends, like much like you and I and a lot of other folks that might listen to this show that we're connected to. So I met him online and then I think face-to-face at GaryCon. And he was in
another GaryCon.
Yeah, it was. It was GaryCon. We were sitting next to each other and he introduced himself because I think this might have been before our podcast launched, actually. And he was sitting next to me and he introduced himself. So we sat in Michael Curtis's game that GaryCon, and since then, you know, he and I have interacted online quite a bit, even just on a professional level outside of gaming. Nick's a really good guy, yeah, and so he ran his adventure for you and I and a few other of his close personal online friends.
Are those his personal friends? I don't know.
I'm being facetious. Oh. Like,
I know Rick Hull was in that, and you, and I don't think I knew any of the other people. Did you?
No, I don't think so.
There's my cat.
Yeah. What's your cat's name, Hobbs?
This is Cleo.
Cleo.
She's very vocal.
I see.
And she hangs out here. So.
Of course, as cats do when you're talking on mics.
So concerning this game, first of all, we should say Nick was sick, and I only played in one of the sessions. They were supposed to be 1 6-hour session, but it ended up being 2 3-hour sessions, right? I didn't make it to the second one. So was that how long it was?
Yeah, something like that. I think, yeah, as a matter of fact, because I think I had a heart stop at like 9 and I had to bolt on the second.
I can understand that because a 6-hour game starting at 6, that's oof. Brutal. And I knew I couldn't make it. So I was kind of glad he got sick. So
in the first session, he was dog sick and he could barely talk without coughing. And, you know, so he couldn't complete a sentence without coughing up a lung.
There were times when he like coughed for minutes at a time.
Yeah. Felt bad for the guy. I
did too.
You take like a 6-hour session and you get like an hour's worth of words out in 4 hours. It's, you don't move along too far. And that's, you know, I felt bad for him.
Yeah, it was brutal, but he was a trooper and he really tried to finish it out. But then he ended up canceling it, or stopping in the middle, not canceling. And honestly, I was glad, because there was no way I was making it till midnight.
Habs, it exceeded the John McCain sleep hour. Habs hits the bed about 7 or 8 o'clock, right, Habs?
I try to. I mean, 2 hour sessions, 6 to 8, or what I usually play, and then I'm in bed.
Yeah,
right away. That's the awesome thing about playing games online.
You could see it in your face, man. You've got such youth from all that rest that you get. It's got to be your secret.
Yeah, that must be it. And I'm going to punch you when I see it.
So just remember, everybody, once you see Hobbs, you'll be like, oh, what such youthful skin, because he gets a lot of rest every night.
That's right. And then when I'm still up at 2 at GaryCon and you already went to bed and I'm up at 6 the next morning, we'll talk about this again.
Yeah, that's true.
All right. So I thought a lot of the people were really into it. There were, what, 8 players or something?
Holy cow, man. Yeah, there was a lot of players that first session. A few couldn't make it the second one, like yourself, but yeah, there was a lot of players.
Which was brutal, and the GM was sick as shit, so it was rough. I don't want to say the game itself, or what he was actually talking about was rough, but just that environment around the game made it more difficult than it could have been if those things weren't going on, like less players and he wasn't sick. Which in the second game, that's probably how it was, right?
Yeah, it went a lot smoother, for sure. Nick was in better spirits and feeling better, so that helped out immensely. I think that there was maybe a couple players missing, so of course, you know, getting around to what people were doing was a little bit faster. Yeah, it was good. I mean, overall, the adventure was fun, and I liked the approach to it. I can't wait to see what it looks like in print.
That makes me want to talk briefly about the actual game at Gamehole Con that he ran, which was obviously face-to-face, and he had an awesome castle and all these miniatures that he had done, and everything looked really cool, didn't it?
Yeah, so he ran it under our banner, which we are big supporters of Gamehole, which is a gaming convention in November in Madison, and Nick was nice enough to run the Faces, Tower of Faces. He needed another table, and we couldn't get one. But it took up like a big circular conference table, the entire thing, like all the way around to the edge, and a big set piece. And then in the middle, of course, was the tower of faces, and very impressive. And then I don't know if you saw this, Hobbs. Did you see his special guests?
I don't think so. Oh, wait. He brought the LARPers in or something?
I think so. Yeah, he took pictures with them. So he had like a couple rat men actually show up to the game.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
I think my buddy Tim DeShane actually played in that game, and wasn't it 2 4-hour sessions or something at Gamehole?
She didn't come up to Gamehole.
She didn't. Who was it
DeShane
then?
DeShane didn't come up to Gamehole.
No, you're right. It wasn't DeShane. It was somebody else, but I can't remember who it was that was actually in that game. Someone told me about it, and I'm like, holy shit, you're going to play 8 hours of the same game? He's like, yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, I didn't know if it was an 8-hour game or 6. I know typically when Nick runs, he's not running anything less than 6.
Wow.
Yeah, and I think it was DCC. For some reason, I had AD&D in my head for some reason, but nonetheless.
I thought it was AD&D too, actually.
Was it?
I thought it was.
Maybe it was before, or maybe he's porting it because he, we should have Nick on here to talk about this. Maybe he ran it AD&D, and then because he won the contest, he's playtesting it for DCC rules. I don't know.
I think so. That was my guess.
We're totally speculating, I'm guessing, right?
Then that's all I ever do, because facts or anything like that are unimportant as far as I'm concerned.
And they're expensive, right? Fact checkers?
Yeah. We don't want to pay for it. Unless I get a lot more patrons or something, there's no way I'm having a fact check.
Hey, so for everybody, Hobbs and Friends, head over to patreon.com/
OSRN Hobbs.
There you go.
I was probably going to do that later, but I like the way you just kind of take it. You and Don. That's why I have game. That's why I have hot podcasters. Come on, just because I don't have to do as much, and I'm lazy. So, in the session that I was actually in, the things that I liked. I mean, I know Nick, and I've played in games with him at GaryCon, and he's always about these voices that he does. I mean, he's a huge guy that loves to do. I don't mean he's huge like fat. I just mean he's like a huge voice guy.
He's like 8 feet tall and comes in at about 400.
Ginormous. No, so what do you think? I mean, to me, that's like one of the perks of actually playing with Nick is his high-pitched wizard voice. You ever noticed that or no?
Yeah, he did a bumper for our show.
Oh, that's right.
So I said, hey, Nick, you know, would you like to do an intro for our show? And he's like, sure. And he did it in like Ratagool, like one of his player NPCs. So he might get really all squishy and he's just Ratagool.
I'm Ratagool the Mystic.
You mean, yeah, I remember you're that. You're listening to. And so Nick does get into it. It's fun. I like how he does that.
Which also kind of sucked because he was sick. So it was a lot harder for him to do those voices.
Yeah, he'd start and then cough like he smoked a joint or something.
Your turn. Yeah. That was just tough, man, because that's the really awesome thing. Another aspect of the game is the tower itself, and it has these faces, and then they like gyrate or shift around, and whenever one rolls a 1 or a 20, something happens, right?
There was the tasks at hand for us, right? We're going to meet a bunch of... Mm-hmm. We don't want to give too much away, but...
Right. It's just, you didn't actually go into the tower. The whole game was on this estate that had the tower, and NPCs pretty much just showed up, and you interacted with them, and that's what the whole game is, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I might be simplifying a tad bit, but essentially we're assigned to stay there and interact with travelers that come that are supposed to bring things to, is like a patron, or I guess for the most part, I don't know.
Yeah, I would agree. Right? Which was also just kind of an interesting concept. We're not dungeon crawling here. We're really just guards for this tower.
Yeah, and that's one thing I got to hand it to Nick, because I think there's a little bit of role playing in there, right? So sometimes you can get into we'll just get them into the tower and then it'll be just a dungeon crawl, where this one was, you'd have people show up. And he would provide a problem, and we would have to kind of wonder what to do. And it might be combat, or maybe just talking to the person for there was a transaction piece that was involved, right?
Yeah, it's just interaction with a lot of NPCs, which totally would normally go right in Nick's alley, because he could do these crazy voices for all of them. Yeah. So what did you think about the tower part? You know, he had that drop table, and whenever you were all the 1 or a 20 on a D20, something happened. Do you remember that or no? Did that happen in the second session?
I don't remember that. He might have had that, but I don't remember it. Maybe we never rolled a 1 or a 20.
It happened in the first session because I can't even remember what happened, but he showed us the picture that has like 20 different faces, and then you're supposed to drop something in there, and some of them are like Doug or something else, or a dragon. And
there's like a clown a huge face, table. Like a, yeah, a baker, yeah, or something that represented like a baker.
Well, that was the tower doors, but
yes.
All right.
That's not you're terrible. That's not what you're talking about.
No, I'm talking about the drop table. There was a drop table that a certain thing would happen.
Oh,
obviously you don't remember.
I don't.
So that's cool. All right. So did you have a favorite thing that happened, or was there anything specific to you that really stands out from either session that you really enjoyed?
There was something in a box. There was contemplation on whether to let it out of the box or not.
Are you sure this is in Brett's Avalon game?
No, you were... No, it's not that. You weren't there. It was the second session.
Oh, okay.
So it was one of those scenarios where we ran into an NPC, and of course anything in a role-playing game where you're not exactly sure how this is going to go, you kind of, let's try this or let's try that. I know there was one piece of it where I think there was something we came across. I don't remember if it was a scarecrow or what it was. And, you know, you come across something in a dungeon or in an adventure. You're kind of like, well, do you just go up to it? Do you poke it? And so I just walked up to it because I was playing a halfling. And, well, it wasn't a beneficial thing. So I had a few people that were like, way to go, asshole, you know, but you know, you got to move things along, right? You can sit there and look
that's
at this.
That's what makes it fun. Yeah.
Yeah. You can look at it for about 15 minutes, 20 minutes, but you're not getting anywhere if you're just looking at it.
Yeah. Well, what's going to happen? Yeah, you had to do something with it, right? You can't just leave this box laying around.
I'm a character of action, Hobbs.
Well, you have to make up for your real life, which, never mind. I'm just kidding.
No, that's true. I live a pretty mundane real life. That's why I play role-playing games.
That's right. That's a good reason. For me, the session we played in was truncated and he was sick, but there was the scene where this giant spear is like just stuck in the dirt near the tower. And me, you, and Rick Hull, I think, were interested in the spear. Do you remember that?
I do, yeah.
And Rick was playing like the fighter, and he was supposed to be the strong guy, and he tried to pull this giant spear out of the ground, and he couldn't get it, but he just kept on trying. I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah, and then it was somebody that was much weaker, like some wizard or something walked over and just grabbed it and pulled it right out.
So you were playing a halfling. They were all pre-generated characters, and they're a sixth level. So we're talking sixth level characters in DCC with eight players. So it was pretty crazy, don't you think?
Yeah, it was fun. I don't think I've ever played that level of DCC game. Even Michael Curtis's game at GaryCon was maybe all second level.
Yeah, and they're still pretty potent.
A lot of people run funnels. I don't know, for one shots.
They do. Yeah. Well, that's easy. As a GM, you don't have as many things to worry about running DCC with funnel characters because they're just normal dudes and they have very few abilities. And it's way more OSR in that situation because there's not a lot of rules or powers or anything. People just do whatever they want and then the GM has to make a ruling. So that's pretty cool. What'd you think about the other character? Did you like the pre-gens?
Yeah, he covered the gamut. I think he had one of each almost.
Oh, at least.
Covered the spectrum.
I had a cleric.
Did you?
Yeah. There were two clerics. One was like lawful and one was neutral. And I think I was lawful. I don't remember. It was fun, though.
You weren't there the second time, and I know I was getting healed by somebody else.
Yeah. Another guy was playing a neutral cleric. To me, that's the most thing I did in the whole session. We had a couple fights. One of them was almost immediately, and I won't go into what it was with, but all I pretty much did is cast Sanctuary and run around and heal people. That was fun, though. I'm cool with it. My next question about the game, and really the last one, is did it feel like an OSR game to you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. DCC, I think, overall will facilitate that type of feel. So, you know, with Nick running it, yeah, it aligned with that pretty well, I think.
Yeah, like you said, it was a whole lot of this is what's happening and what are you going to do about it? You didn't necessarily have a lot of abilities or skills on your character sheet that would help you decide. So it was mostly just players making decisions and how they want to do things, right? And that's OSR as you can get, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's funny. You mentioned like being sixth level and still, even though my halfling was sixth level, I think the coolest thing it could do, which is pretty standard to halflings anyway in DCC, is the two weapon piece. And you might have a few more hit points. But other than that, it's not like a huge difference between, I think in some games, whether you're first level and sixth, that can be, you could get some really a steep power band, I guess, or an increase in power from those five levels.
Yeah, you'd be jumping a tier in 5e, and that's huge. You've already chosen your third level tract, and just the sheer amount of abilities is much greater at that level than otherwise.
Yeah.
And, like, the wizards were crazy in the Tower of Faces game. The amount of output of damage they could do with their magic missiles. They're casting two of them, and their spell check is really high. So that was impressive, for sure.
Yeah, they were doing some massive, I mean, like, 30, 40 points of damage in a DCC game and just annihilating things. And I think Nick was like, holy shit, you know, like, seriously?
I don't really think they need to be sixth level, in my opinion. I'm going to talk to Nick about it at GaryCon and unless you saw something different later, do you really think the characters needed to be that high a level?
I don't know. It's a unique system because I think one of the things that Nick was probably toying around with was, are the monsters too tough or not tough enough?
Yeah. It's a very swingy game, and the amount of damage that wizards can output compared to the fighter classes make it hard to figure that out, I think.
Which aligns back to some of the roots, right? Where wizards suck at the beginning, and then once they're high enough level, they're nuking, laying down big, big hurt on NPCs. So, kind of funny.
That's actually an interesting topic, and I don't necessarily agree with it, because there's an article I read once about how tough an OSR fighter really is when you get to, say, 10th level. Yeah, wizards can output some area effect damage. Fighting first level monsters, you know, one hit dice creatures, they could do a 10 attacks. And so they could kill a large swath of them. And they're going to survive way longer than any wizard in a situation like that because a wizard's going to get overwhelmed almost instantly. Yeah, they'll put down a fireball, maybe two, or a lightning bolt, but then they're dead. The fighter's still going to be alive and still going to be putting more damage per round than they would. So what do you think? Have you ever heard that before?
I agree with you to some extent, but there is that for whatever reason, people, you know, kind of say, look, when a wizard gets to X level, they're a force to be reckoned with. But you got to admit, though, Hobbs, when you start out as a wizard, old D&D first edition, whatever it is, I mean, you got like, what, 2 hit points maybe? I mean, you stub your toe, the wizard's dead.
Yeah.
So I think that's where
it's like a funnel all the time.
Yeah. And then once you get up high enough, though, you're not still not, I mean, you could be what? Maybe 8th level and still have only like 20 or 30 hit points. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
But I do think the output that they have is crazy silly.
Yeah, it is. And it's all at once and it's area effect, which there's very little of that in OSR games. Only the spellcasters can do it. And they can't do it that often. But when they do it, it's like, holy shit, this is crazy.
That's a good topic for a show, though. I'd certainly
it is
like that conversation. Absolutely.
Yeah, I like it. All right, so I was going to talk to you about Savage Worlds, but I don't think we really have time to give it the discussion it needs, so I'm just not going to talk about a product spotlight today. So what I do want to talk about is the state of the OSR, and I'm going to give you a little background about the top. I'm working on a zine for Hobbs and Friends, and it should be coming out very quickly, and I started collecting art from people, including Craig Brasco, John Bird, and my cousin Patrick Stevens. And the art is great, and there's more art than there is product of what I'm doing. The writing is nothing compared to the art, in my opinion, but hopefully you guys still like it. But anyhow, one of the pieces of art that I got had a female breasts in it, all right? And I was like, oh, it's a piece of art. It was free, and it's awesome. I'll just throw it in. But one of my buddies, Ray Case, when I showed it to him, he's like, is this really what you want to put in your zine? And what do you think about it? I don't care if you do. He didn't care if I put it in or not. He just really wanted to make me think about it and if that's what I wanted. So the topic really is nudity in products. And how do you feel about it? I mean, are you cool with it? Do you think it's a bad idea? It comes with a lot of baggage. Do you have any thoughts on the topic?
That is a can of worms, my friend. You're going to get some folks that are going to be very... That should be in there. It's your product. You put whatever the hell you want in it. And if it's naked women, fine. Somebody may argue why there's not naked men in the same zine, right?
Yeah. Well, actually, Hawk put in a mud man or looks kind of like a trollish kind of, and he put a penis on it. It was
a
joke.
He put a dong on the mud man?
Yeah, he did. He put it on there and he's like, I put that on there just for you. And I'm like, okay, I'm fine with it. We ended up taking it off. He did because it looked kind of silly. It was just like a scratched in dong on this decent picture. But
it was like, here's the picture. We're just going to take it and put it in MS Paint and like draw a dong on it.
Yeah, pretty much. But he took that out himself. So you're right. It is a polarizing topic because you have the aspect of censorship and then you have the aspect of, well, is it just necessary or not? To me, this was actually took me a couple days to figure out, which isn't, you could say that's not that long, but.
Well, if you give it some thought, I think it's worth it, right? Some people don't think anything of it, and they don't think of it because of a particular reason. But I think if you think about it, you know that it is a topic to ponder.
Yeah. It came down in the end. One of the aspects is a guy has given me art for free, and Brasco isn't actually a professional artist who's done covers for RPG materials, and he's good. He's very good. And you should check out his website. I think it's craigbrasco.com. A great artist. And it's free, and so for me to tell him what he should give me or not give me, I didn't really feel comfortable with it. But in the end, I thought, if my daughters are looking at it or in the same room and I'm trying to tell someone that I'm producing, and would they feel comfortable about it? And I don't really think they would. And I want to be more inclusive and little amount of exclusivity as I can. So in the end, I asked him to change it. So would you have?
You know, I think it is something I would be conscious of. I would probably opt to not go that route with the nudity piece because of the reason you brought up. I mean, let's face it. There's enough males in the RPG tabletop industry that have been around and been at the forefront for quite a while. And I think women have been. They've been around, but they are probably encountered things that us guys haven't. Because some of us guys, not all of us, can not always think things through for whatever reason. And so I think that if you, I mean, if you left it in, you could maybe run into people that think that you're not representing the full spectrum.
Yeah, exactly.
You're being sexist.
It's a comfort level. If someone's not going to be comfortable with it, then I don't think it's as good of a product as it could be.
You know what, though, and the same thing, Hobbs, is you're trying to put out a zine where gamers are going to want to buy it and get some stuff out of it, like some of the grit, the content, right?
Yeah.
So the artwork is nice. It pretties it up. And some people may actually want to buy it just for the artwork, but I don't think that's maybe not your goal, right? Otherwise, then do an art book and put it on the coffee table.
Yeah, no, I'm trying to put out a zine that people will like for OSR Gaming. It's free to $4 patrons. So other than that, you're probably going to have to pay for something on Drive-Thru RPG. So anyway, there's that. You have anything else?
I think with having two women in your family or two young girls, and if you want to get them into the hobby, is that something that would discourage them from being in the hobby? And I think if that's an issue, then you just remove it. Now, some other folks are going to be like, oh, you guys are just a bunch of uptight people, and, you know, screw it if people get offended. And that's certainly their opinion, but, you know, they're not putting out the zine.
Yeah, they're not the one in the end that are responsible for what's in there and how it makes people feel. That's what I think. All right, so we're already long. Way to go, Sean. So let's wrap some stuff up. First of all, I want to thank the following patrons: Gabriel Perez Gishardi, Craig Stokes, and Steve Sigity. Thanks, guys. I really appreciate it. I also want to thank Chris, because last episode I jacked up and forgot to mention the patrons, and he just kind of added on the end. I appreciate that. I'd also like to thank Sean for being on the show and for being a guy I could always ask anything about the podcasting world that I wanted to, and I really appreciate you mentoring me in that way, Sean. Thank you.
Yeah, my pleasure, man. Absolutely. I'm glad you got it up and running. It sounds like it's a great success. Hope everybody tunes into the show and enjoys everything you put out, Hobbs.
Well, thanks, man. I don't know if it's a great success, but I think it succeeded more than I ever expected it to. So that's awesome. We're going to be at GaryCon. Both Sean and I will be there. We'll be the drunk guys on the corner. No, I'm just kidding about that part.
I heard Hobbs is going to have, like, Hobbs and Friends has, like, because they're part of the Misdirected Mark episode or network of shows, that you guys were gonna have like an open bar Saturday night, like from like 8 to midnight. Is that true, Hobbs?
That's true. The open bar is at Sean Kelletow's, and I'm buying. So I hope to see you guys at GaryCon. Anyway, if you ever want to reach me on Twitter, I'm at Hobbs Indeed, and the podcast has its own Twitter feed, OSR and Hobbs. And you can find me on Patreon at patreon.com/OSR and Hobbs. How could we reach you, Sean?
Oh, I think the best way is just to go to gamingandbs.com. That's our podcast. You'll be able to find our Twitter, Facebook, and Google Plus accounts there, as well as ways to subscribe to our show. And if you subscribe, great. And if you don't, hey, that's cool too. Otherwise, you can find me on Twitter, my personal account at Sean P. Kelly. That's S-E-A-N. P is in the Patrick. Last name, Kelly with an E-Y.
Yeah, that EY is important.
Yeah, people miss the EY.
We're both also on G+. And he has a community on his Gaming BS. So that's awesome. And I have a community for Hobbs and Friends of the OSR. That's what it's called. And thanks to everybody, we got over 200 members now. And that's pretty good, because we've only been around for just over a month. So that's awesome. You got anything else to say, Sean?
No, I just want to thank you for having me on the show, Hobbs. I really appreciate it.
No, I'm glad, and you certainly didn't have to bribe me or anything to be on before Brett. So,
hey, checks in the mail, beer set aside for you, GaryCon.
All right. So the last thing is that Hobbs and Friends of the OSR is part of the Mr. Ecomark Network, the media arm.